Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 230. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. We got a fun streaming review pod today. A lot of news. There was an incredible amount of movie news in the last 7 days, and trailers and random shit. Some real big hitters. And then we're gonna be reviewing. And when I say reviewing, it's more of a light discussion on a pretty incredible B movie, and that is The Velocipastor.
I don't even know if you could describe it as a B movie.
Yeah, it's... it's something done, let me just say now, done completely intentionally.
Yes.
But it's absolutely worth talking about because it is funny and is I'll save my thoughts because we're going to be reviewing two movies later on in the week, Sonic and Fantasy Island. And I have very strong takes on one of them.
Is it Sonic?
It's not Sonic.
Oh, okay.
It's very much, very, very much not Sonic. So it's funny to watch something like The Velocipastor after watching Fantasy Island and comparing what they are, the budget, what's being backed, the people in it. It's just, it's an interesting two movies to watch back to back.
For me, I'm surprised Fantasy Island wasn't good.
Calling it not good would be a compliment. It's honest to God, one of the worst movies I've seen in my life.
Do you know what I'm watching right now on mute?
XFL.
No, I was watching the XFL. Now it's Ellen's Game of Games.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have watched Ellen's Game of Games.
Are you an Ellen's Game of Games person?
No. I actually really don't like that show.
It's something else, man. It really is. I watched a few minutes of it with the sound on, and I kind of liked it, but also at the same time, it's like Double Dare, but for adults, I guess.
It's like if a really rich person said, "I want my own game show," and then just threw in things she remembered from a bunch of other game shows and physical reality competitions.
Do you remember when Minute to Win It was hot?
Oh yeah, with Guy Fieri.
What happened to that Steph Curry golf show? I kind of like that one.
Oh yeah, what was it called?
I don't remember, but Rob Brugel was
Holy
in his
Moly. Post.
Yeah, Holy Moly.
Wait, what is this?
Holy Moly, the Steph Curry golf competition,
the mini golf show.
I don't remember that.
That's surprising.
We talked about it on the pod.
Yeah, we talked about it very briefly. Yeah,
I probably just blacked out, didn't even pick it up because I've never even heard of this. What? Network, was it on a network or was it on cable? Yeah.
It was on a network, but I think I watched it on Hulu. I think it's ABC.
Yeah, it was ABC. Yeah. It was very entertaining in like a family wholesome way and not as much fun as I'd hoped it would be. Mm-hmm. I actually, when I was home around Christmas, we were flipping through like We like watching Family Feud every now. Family Feud is a very fun show to watch. And there was this knockoff version called America Says on GSN. And it's just Family Feud ripped off. Hosted by, he's one of the judges on, excuse me, one of the judges on Pitch Perfect, or one of the announcers.
Pitch, oh, from the movie. Fred Willard.
But it's not Fred. It's the guy who reminds you of Fred Willard.
Wait, Fred Willard wasn't in Pitch Perfect?
No. No,
I
it's
the, Fred Willard was
John Michael that. Higgins.
Oh, I don't know. Am I thinking of Best in Show? I guess every sardonic announcer is Fred Willard to me.
Well, this guy is in Best in Show. Guy.
God damn it, really?
What the fuck? He's the guy that reminds you of Fred Willard.
I thought that was Fred Willard.
No, it's not. No.
What?
No. Yeah, he's on this show called America Says, which is funny because Family Feud is just America saying things through polls. And that's all this show. It's really stupid.
How do they poll people on Family Feud?
I don't think that's real. I don't think they actually do that. Yeah, that's
the thing. Next,
you're telling me the joke answers on Hollywood Squares are written in advance.
Bruce Valanche, Hollywood Squares legend.
Who was the other host on the Holy Moly show? Was it Tess?
It was Joe Tess. Yeah, Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football's Joe Tessitore and Rob Riggle. And then they would trot Steph Curry out for about 5 minutes every episode.
Make put Booger on that show. I'd watch it every day.
What about the Lego Master show? Have you watched that yet?
No, I want to.
I got into some Lego action this weekend, fellas.
What'd you build?
Okay, so I texted you yesterday, and I went to a pristine 1995 vintage Barnes & Noble. I mean, this is just one of the gigantic Barnes & Noble stores, you know, full coffee shop, full everything, just reminded me of the 90s. And while I was there, I got one of the Lego architecture kits.
Hell yeah.
You know, like you build city skylines or whatever, so you can do Legos, but you don't feel so much bad about it because it's a elevated form of Lego. And I got the Tokyo kit, and I did Tokyo last night and this morning. It's very therapeutic. I quite enjoy it.
It looks nice.
I thought you were going to do Indianapolis or something. Here's the Salesforce Tower.
Haven't made that one yet. Yeah, here's the KeyBank Tower. I forget what it's called now.
Here's the JW Marriott.
You're describing the skyline into Indianapolis and this is scarily accurate detail.
Here's the 300 North Meridian right here for you in the Lego architecture kit.
Yeah, it would be like Lucas Oil Stadium, Soldiers and Sailors Monument, KeyBank Tower, whatever it's called now, and then be St. Elmo's Steakhouse.
Yes, St. Elmo's Steakhouse.
That would be the last thing on that because you got to have St. Elmo's Steakhouse. Anytime
do you want your Family Feud survey answer?
Yeah.
So there's two answers to this, but I believe one is the more correct one, is that they outsource their surveys, which if you watch McMillions, the McDonald's Monopoly thing, outsourcing, bad idea apparently. But I don't think rigging these is that big of a deal. But they outsource it, and if you get the phone call, you're not told it's for Family Feud. Huh. You don't know what you're answering for. I feel like the questions are random. But then there's someone else who apparently claims that it's a studio audience. So there's a little bit of a dispute. But people say it's
Gallup. Yeah. Gallup doing that. Gallup doing also, you know, important polls. And then they're also calling people for Family Feud shit too.
They call you up and they say two questions. Who are you voting for in the Democratic primary? Also, name one thing you would not want your wife to find in your glove box on Valentine's Day.
Boop, boop, boop. A gun.
Roman swipe.
We haven't talked about a food product, I feel like, in a while. And by that, I mean we probably did last episode. But I didn't know this was a thing. This commercial aired over the weekend. Have you guys heard about the Papadias at Papa John's?
No.
What?
Papa John's is making pizza quesadillas called Papadias.
All right.
Part pizza, part sandwich, all delicious, they say.
Hear me out. That sounds great. I love the sound of that. Not from Papa John's. Let me be very clear about that. I love this in theory, just not from them.
Papa Diaz. Those look good. It's like a calzone, open face calzone.
It is. I mean, kind of like a pizza folded in half. That's just how people eat pizza in New York. Papa John's new flatbread style sandwich is made from original fresh dough filled with real meats, veggies, and cheese.
So did you guys hear that Papa John admitted that he didn't eat 30 to 40 pizzas?
Complete lie, yeah.
He didn't eat 40 pizzas in 30 days. He said he didn't eat them. He had them.
Yeah, I believe that. That's what I thought. He didn't.
What does that mean?
Pizzas. It means he was sitting in the Papa Cave underneath his house outside of Louisville, Kentucky. You know, like 50 feet.
The Papa bunker in Kasserine Pass, Afghanistan.
the Papa bunker in Jeffersonville, Indiana, with his armed sentries, and he was ordering pizzas like every day and a half. Or no, actually every three-fourths of a day or whatever the math comes out to take a slice and just try it, just quality control it, just to see how everything was going. So I never imagined him crushing 40 pizzas.
But who says that? Like, if you said you had something, would you meant, like, especially in the food context, would you say you'd use that to describe inspecting something or eating it?
I agree. I think it's highly disappointing Papa John didn't just slam pizzas. The whole time.
If Trill, if you said, hey, I just had Panda Express and then like an hour later, you're like, hey, I'm hungry. Do you guys want to go eat? And we were like, why? You just ate Panda. You'd be like, no, I just had,
I inspected it.
Or if it was like, I got a bucket of Popeye's chicken every night. And it turns out I was just eating one breast from it.
No, not even eating it, though. You're inspecting it. Because he didn't say he eat it. He said he didn't eat it at all. So he's not testing it at all, period. He's just looking at it and throwing it out.
Man, do you remember when nobody asked questions about the Papa? He was just the guy in the box.
The drunk TV guy commercial. In the Final Four.
I'll tell you what.
Before that. And then now, like, people saw those pictures, start getting into it. Now people are asking a lot of questions about the Papa.
I'll tell you what. If you want a good, very light laugh, not the funniest thing in the world, but I chuckle every time I see it because I now follow him on Instagram. People will comment on his Instagram and be like, Papa, love you, big fan, loved Papa John's. Can you give me a Papa bless? And he'll reply with hashtag Papa bless.
Papa bless.
And he gives him a Papa bless.
Yeah, that's he thing, right? He Productions. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. H3.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The voice modulation thing they did to him in his interview, they did. I mean, he's not somebody you can do dirty, not a great guy, but that was very funny because his voice sounded like he was a monster.
Oh, he sounded like Buffalo Bill from Silence.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny that people believe that because, like, he'd been in commercials for so many years saying better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John. And, like,
I always talk like this, Papa John's.
Yeah. But then, like, all of a sudden we were, like, kind of tricked into believing he had the deepest voice in the history of humans.
I thought maybe like we were reversed, like tricked. I thought for a second, maybe every commercial they've been reverse modulating his voice. And this was finally his real voice.
Making him seem more approachable and relatable. Yeah. Top 10 anime betrayal is when he showed up on the University of Kentucky sidelines wearing UK apparel.
Yeah.
After years of paying enough money for his company to sponsor the football stadium at UofL and being a patron of the UofL football and basketball programs, which, by the way, innocent, give back the 2013 title. Okay. Just give them back. Like, let's just not get in this whole stripping title thing. And then he shows up UK apparel. It's like, where's the loyalty? So I don't know. Look, Papa John, I'm excited to see what his next move is.
The Papa day bless. Of reckoning.
Papa bless.
I believe there's a day of reckoning coming. I believe it's coming somehow. I don't know in what form. Like, I don't know what format, but I think he's probably a man of his word.
Going to set off a tactical nuke at Pizza Hut headquarters.
All I know is if you end up getting the Papadilla, please tweet at us. Tag us at Lights Camera Pod.
I mean, I'm going to get it, so you guys don't have to worry about it.
Okay, that's fair. It looks too.
It looks okay, but like, why get that instead of a pizza? Like, it's not a long-term thing. That's not going to catch on. That's a very limited time. Short-term product to get people talking about your brand. I think that's very smart, but that's not a sustainable menu item, in my opinion.
Where would you think that Pizza Hut is headquartered? If you had to guess.
They're in Dallas.
Well, yeah, it's close. It's Plano. Yeah, I'm probably not pronouncing that. Plano, Texas. Yeah.
Plano's a suburb of Dallas. Because Yum, the overall Yum is, I think they're headquartered in Kentucky. And then Taco Bell's in California and Pizza Hut's in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And then
Taco Bell's in Irvine, yeah.
And what's the other one?
It's KFC, Taco Bell.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, KFC, Taco Bell, in Kentucky. Pizza Hut, yeah. I believe Long John Silver's is part of that. I thought Long John was younger.
I think they sold them off. I think they were either trying to or sold off Long John Silver's and A&W.
Oh, that's right, because you'll see A&W Long John sometimes as a combo.
I don't know why these brands didn't work out. Fish and hot dogs. Come on into the combo store.
There's also, speaking of bizarre pizza things, Domino's is running a new commercial, and they just have fucking like CGI'd in Norm from Cheers into the commercial. I don't know what the target demographic
pizza is. Pizza Wars, man. It's tough. It's tough out there.
All right. Let's do an ad read because we got a lot to get to. This episode brought to you in part by Manscaped. That's right. Perfect Package 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene. That's right. The only one. It's forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essentials Kit. All the perfect tools you need for, again, below-the-waist grooming. Comes with the Lawnmower 3.0. Incredible stuff. Waterproof, cordless body trimmer. Ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. Third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Subscribers get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. That's very important. For a limited time, subscribers get not one but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, $40 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. Anti-chafing Boxer Briefs, that's good. You can run around in those, not worry about chafing. Perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off free shipping.
Oh.
Code LIGHTS, LIGHTS. Manscaped.com.
Oh.
The Itachi Magic Wand.
Yeah, I'm using a knockoff product, and it's just catching me everywhere.
It also randomly turned the gain up on your microphone too at the same time.
Like 200%. That was crazy.
Something about Nick in the sack.
I will say I used my Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 before Valentine's Day. Got a compliment. So if you want a compliment, it was from me to myself in the mirror. But I just want to say, got a compliment.
That counts as a compliment.
I plug it into a gas generator. I call it the 3.0.
It runs on ethanol. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm out in front of my double wide with a gas generator. What are you doing? Don't worry about it, Steve.
You're going to flood the engine.
How about Wes Anderson? Wes Anderson is back with a trailer for his newest movie called The French Dispatch. And it is one of the most Wes Anderson-y movies I've ever seen, at least trailers.
It hit
so many tropes, and I'll just read off again. Honest trailers, I think their best video is their Wes Anderson video.
So
it breaks down all the things that happen in his movies. It's a hilarious video. I highly suggest you guys watch it. Symmetrical shots, overhead shot of objects, shots of typewritten letters. You see a typewriter happening, so that's going to happen. Characters explaining elaborate plans, whimsical names. We've already said like J.K.L. Berenson, Lucinda Kremitz, old-timey telephones, moving vehicles, smoking. Timothy Chalamet is smoking. He is like the most Wes Anderson person alive, I think. Wilson brothers in it, Owen Wilson, tiny motorcycles, profile shots, miniatures and models, and much more. The French Dispatch, which has been described as a love letter to journalists set in an outpost of an American newspaper in a fictional 20th century French city.
Mm.
And stars Benicio del Toro, Adrian Brody, Tilda Swinton, Lea Seydoux, Francis McDormand, Timothy Chalamet, Jeffrey Wright, Bill Murray, Owen Wilson, Liev Schreiber, Elizabeth Moss, Edward Norton, Willem Dafoe, Saoirse Ronan, Christoph Waltz, Rupert Friend, Henry Winkler, Bob Balaban, Angelica Houston. The list goes on and on. It's kind of insane. And I thought the trailer was wonderful. it has a lot of similar vibes, I would say, in terms of like story and pacing and the tone to Fantastic Mr. Fox. It is because there's like an explosion in it. That's the only reason I'm saying that, but that's just kind of the vibe I got. Whether that's right or wrong, I guess we'll see.
Wes Anderson, it's his own genre at this point.
Someone's
like, what genre is this movie? It's Wes Anderson. That's how I had to describe it. Because you're watching it and you're like, okay, well, you know, there's a symmetrical shot. There's a symmetrical shot. But that's what you want. So I'm excited for this. I I always like the takes on kind of these like idyllic fantasy periods in time that probably never existed other than in the, you know, through the lens of nostalgia and longing to actually have been alive at that time. I felt like Midnight in Paris was kind of like that, not a Wes Anderson movie, obviously. But it's just like 20th century, like that sort of deal with having those sort of characters in place, like the dialogue, the snappy dialogue, and the Timothy Chalamet smoking, and the Bill Murray being a gruff, no nonsense journalist type guy with the no crying sign above the office on his door. These all seemed like very Wes Anderson-y things, and I'm on board for it. I enjoyed it. I think that I've criticized Wes Anderson in the past for being Wes Anderson, and at this point, I'm just accepting the fact that he does his own thing, and I think that's very respectable.
Mm-hmm. Very much an artist, visual artist. I think if you vibe with his shit, you really vibe with it. But I think if you don't, you really don't. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, no, I'm not really polarizing as a director, but I think that the people that enjoy it really do like it. But I think there's a larger subject or group that doesn't.
I think the problem with Wes Anderson, like at least kind of when, you know, like post Rushmore, when I was a teen to early 20s, and you know, Royal Tenenbaums too. The folks who got into Wes Anderson were like the proto hipster crowd. I hate using the word hipster because now it's just an all encompassing thing to describe a area of town with a Warby Parker in it, which is not what it was back in the early 2000s when I met you, smoked DeJerem Mildes and whatnot. And I think like the people talked about Wes Anderson like it was some sort of like high art type of stuff. You may perceive it to be that way, sure. But I think now I've come to accept that, like, generally, I don't feel like there's a deeper meaning. And if there is, maybe I'm too stupid to pick up on it. But I think a lot of it is just kind of the simple enjoyment of the whimsical settings and the whimsical characters he puts on the screen. And I don't try to overanalyze it.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, I think that's what I kind of enjoy about the movies of his that I like. Is that when, as long as I don't have to like think about it too much of an extent, I just kind of sit there along for the ride and have fun. And I just, again, the one thing I'm hoping going into French Dispatch is I hope he genuinely uses this all-star cast he built up and doesn't pull a sneaky one on us again with like he did with Isle of Dogs, which again I found to be very disappointing. But I notice people saying that they actually really like that one, which is to me a little surprising, but to each their own.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week. Or last episode, I think part of it is it is incredibly easy, fair or not, maybe unfair, to compare it to Fantastic Mr. Fox because of the animation and with the type of movie that it is. And I obviously, not objectively speaking, you can have any opinion on this, but I very much have a strong opinion that Fantastic Mr. Fox is just leagues better than Isle of Dogs. Just a better movie, I thought. And makes me kind of want to watch it again. I haven't watched it in a while. It's a fantastic movie, great voice cast, creative, funny, and again, has that kind of upbeat, fast, in-your-face pacing that I felt like Isle of Dogs did not have. And while I know the story was a bit different and lent to a bit of a more somber pace at times, like they're on a deserted island, I think it kind of detracted from it. I feel like this one has a bit more of that Fantastic Mr. Fox type pace story. So I'm excited for it. Again, like you said, Troll, it's its own genre at this point. So it's just one of those things where if you, like you said, Kendrick, you're either going to really like it or you're just going to be like, this shit isn't for me.
The good part, though, about this trailer is I have no idea what this movie's about.
It's a bunch of short stories, too.
Journalists or something?
Well, no, I know a general framework for the setting and who the characters are, right, with the whole journalist thing. But I have no idea of kind of like the chapter parts and how everything ties together, assuming everything will tie together.
It may not too.
Because you had, you know, what he did with the Darjeeling Limited was there was like a Paris section that like, I think aired before, after the movie with, I think it was Natalie Portman. And I forget if it was like Adrian Brody's character, which I think like kind of set it up, but I don't know, like, if there's going to be an arc to all these short stories or if they're going to be, like, vignettes of the setting. And I think it's cool not really knowing what you get from the trailer because there was some You know, like with the shot where it was following the wheelchair and the wheelchair was in the middle of the frame. That was specifically intriguing to me. Because I'm like, when I picture journalists in Paris in the 20th century, this is not really it. So I'm just like, how does it get to that point? I want to know more.
Maybe we get a little Buster Scruggs action. And Buster Scruggs not being a Wes Anderson character name is an all-time upset.
Yeah, that is a very Wes Anderson character name.
Really? I mean, to me, it's not fancy enough for a Wes Anderson
character. I could definitely see a Bill Murray character named Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, I don't know. Wes Anderson character's name is like
Fiddledy Diddlepot.
Or like Cassandius Alwood.
or Owen Wilson's character in The French Dispatch, Herb St. Sazerac.
Ugh. Ugh.
I love it. Upshur Clampett, that's another character from this. Boris Schommers, Arthur Howitzer Jr.
Those are the Guardians of Gahul you're listening.
I like how Jeffrey Wright's character name is Robic Wright. He's just like, yeah, I don't have a last name for you. Just keep your last name.
Seeing Jeffrey Wright without facial hair really fucked
weird.
Me up.
I haven't seen him without a beard in a long time.
I just watched Casino Royale, too.
He has a beard in that? No, he has like some, what do you call it, some fuzz? No? Or no, it doesn't?
Very thick beard in that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think it might be just a goatee. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, well, let's just keep talking about James Bond. Billie Eilish released her track for No Time to Die, titled No Time to Die, was released on the 13th, a couple days ago. It's music. I don't know where to begin, I guess.
Trill, we can't do music.
Yeah, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about. What did you think, Trill? Billie Eilish's track, No Time
to Die. I thought it was solid. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I think it sounds like the end of this era, right? It sounds like the end of something, the song does. So I'm not saying James Bond will die, but I think it definitely fits in with the tone of the final Daniel Craig James Bond movie. And it's miles ahead of Spectre, which, again, I think Sam Smith...
Writing's on the wall?
Sam Smith, they are very talented. But that song in particular, I didn't really vibe with all that much. Whereas this one, it sounds like a Billie Eilish song with James Bond cues throughout, which I think Ken Jack didn't really like. But I, you got to have some of that.
No, that was my only, kind of issue with it. It's like I really, really like the song. But it felt like throughout it, it kept trying to remind you like, yeah, this is a James Bond song, which like there's nothing wrong with that. But I was hoping they were going to give her a little more free reign to do something. I don't know, maybe a little more original. But I guess that's not really what James Bond is sort of all about. It's more about the classics.
Yeah, I'd say I like the song. I don't love it. And I also reserve that. I got to see it in the movie, too.
The show just came on called Zoe's Extraordinary Place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's his face is in it? Skylar Astin's in it from Pitch Perfect.
But I was just watching the show and she was in this MRI machine and went haywire. I guess this is a pilot.
Yeah. Her life basically is played out through musicals and songs. Like she hears music in her head. That's how she sees life.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Good for her.
Enjoy.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I like the back third of the song or back half of the song. But I think I have to reserve full critique until I see it in the movie. Because I think that's the most important thing. If it fits in the movie, if it fits in the tone of the intro and the cool visuals, then I think I'll like it more. But for what we hear now, I'll say I like it. I'll leave it at that. Big reveal last week, out of nowhere, kind of honestly completely stole the thunder from the Billie Eilish song drop. Because this happened about an hour before the Bond song, and this is all people talked about. They finally teased the Robert Pattinson bat suit for the first time. They did it in a very dark, dark red room lit type thing. So it's hard to see. People really brightened it up and got a good look at the mask, at the suit. Apparently the reason this happened is because they're going to start filming outside. And what we have always said, especially since Shazam, get out ahead of it. Make your own narrative. And so they wanted to release something before people started taking, or like paparazzi had photos or people were in the area and they jumped over a fence. They got to see shit. I don't know. So they controlled the narrative. They showed the suit first. Probably a good idea because the suit is very homemade. It's a very early homemade Batman suit. It's like his first suit, so it's gonna look like shit. It's got a lot of vibes to the original Spider-Man suits, right? The suits that Peter Parker first wears that he makes in his room. And the other interesting note, there's some debate about this. If you read the tea leaves, though, Kevin Smith kind of called this and talked about it, very happy about it. I guess he's friends with Matt Reeves, and people are speculating he knows that the Bat emblem on the suit seems to potentially have been made out of the guns, out of a gun, like a gun cut in half. And so people are saying, is that the gun that killed his parents?
Mm.
And again, there was a lot of questions. And then the more like Kevin Smith started celebrating it, people were like, all right, well, Kevin Smith probably fucking knows something here. Like, it's like, this seems kind of obvious. He's not like bragging that he knows, but he's again celebrating as if this was something he discussed with Matt Reeves. And this is just what he knows.
I don't know if I like the gun thing, and I don't know if I can articulate why I don't, but it seems a bit on the nose. Yet then again, Batman itself is very on the nose.
I'll tell you, hey, how about this? Can I give you a hypothetical?
Yes.
What if the guns is the way they explain his parents being killed for once, and we don't actually fucking see his parents being killed?
Nah, we're going to see his parents die. Come on. Come on. Get the fuck out of here.
That's like, that's basically, you have to have that, right?
Yeah, I can't get enough of that particular scenario. I just, mm-hmm.
What if this time he like drops an Acme anvil on them?
We even saw it in Joker. That's the funniest fuck. Even things loosely connected to Batman, they're like, we got to show it. Yeah, we got to show it.
They're just like, hey guys, get this. You know this version of the Joker. He incited this. Yeah, isn't that funny? And this one, the Matt Reeves one, his parents they're going to get killed by a giant cartoon mallet.
Mm-hmm. He's going to bop them. It's going to be a big Acme rocket, just fires into a piano, drops from the roof. I think the suit looks cool, though. Robbie actually pointed this out. He looked like the Arkham version of it a little bit with the gun thing. And I think that's rad as hell. I think this is going to be cool and dark and hopefully a little bit like different, something new. And I'm down for it. And also, I think visually it looked really interesting, like as far as like the setup. I know it's just whatever, a teaser, but they did the same shit with the Joker when Todd Phillips released that one little like 2-second clip of him in a suit test. And it looked dope. And I like the Michael Giacchino score behind it all. Sounded fucking cool as hell. He's going to make a great score.
Yeah, it definitely, going back to Jeff's point, makes more sense just to control the first release of it with something that looks good rather than getting some Galaxy 8S Note camera through a barbed wire fence
like Shazam.
Looks like shit because it just, you know, his stuff looks stupid when it's not on film. Mm-hmm. I thought our pats looked good though. We talked about that jawline before. That's a Batman jawline for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Big Batman jawline. And I like this suit because I think it fits him well. I don't think everybody who's played Batman has necessarily been a fucking bodybuilder, but Christian Bale definitely put on some poundage for it. I like to think Val Kilmer and George Clooney look at least a little bit bigger on screen than Robert Pattinson has looked, because I've always perceived him as a slender guy. Not saying there can't be a slender Batman, can't be a slim Batman, because Batman Beyond, I think that Batman's kind of thin. But I think this looks good on him. I like the modernization, kind of the triangular looking plating on it, and it looks neat. It will be interesting to see that first trailer, to see how it looks in action, if we get that at all.
It's also, I want to note something. I like it. Like, I think it looks cool. Like, I like the idea of it's a different Batman. It's a young Batman. It's going to be the early edition of a suit that he makes in his home. I think you're going to see a different suit in this movie.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a final suit, right? Like, I don't think this is the final Batman suit. Like, that'd be shocking. Because, like, I don't know. You're going to see a progression of the Batman character here. Like, we saw that with, I know Captain Marvel had a bit of that. I don't think Wonder Woman did. I think early Captain America stuff people saw, like, you're going to see an eventual change in suit. So for me, it doesn't, like, I mean, I don't have like quote unquote concerns or anything. I think by the end of the movie, you're going to see like the official new Batman suit.
Mm-hmm. Like in the first version, he's wearing shorts. It's like, from the top up, it's a bat suit, but from the bottom, it's just some cargo shorts.
Wait, like the zipper ones?
still working on it, but
you the can cargo zipper off the pant legs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but the cargo pockets are functional. They store like his proto batarangs, which are like essentially just fidget spinners. Mm-hmm. And he also has those little firecrackers, the snappers. He has some of those.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I really want to see is the other, like the new villains, because we have a giant list of villains. We still have Andy Serkis as Pennyworth. We have Colin Farrell as Penguin, Zoe Kravitz, Catwoman, Paul Dano, Riddler. Like, there's so many characters in this. Oh, and Jeffrey Wright. We're just Jeffrey talking Wright about again. Yeah. And who else am I missing? I think John, our boy John, he's Carmine Falcone. Falcone? How do they pronounce it in Batman Begins? I forget.
Falcone, I thought.
Falcone. But yeah, we have a whole bunch of other characters wrong. Still on the list, and I want to see how they look.
I'm pumped.
I know. I'm excited. I'm ready for a new Batman. It's been too long. It's been 5 years, right?
Just absolutely no fucking reason that in the middle of the comic book movie boom, Batman and Superman are on the fucking sidelines for the most part.
Like,
just
we have Batman versus Superman. Give them the respect.
It's just like, right? Like, it's really fucked. It just really is.
Bat suit.
The two most popular comic book characters alongside Spider-Man, and they're just, for the most, again, the most part on the sidelines. Spider-Man and Iron Man and Thor, they're in like 100 movies a year, it feels like, and like we're scraping away to get Batman and may not see Superman for a while. So just good to see it happen. Just need some Batman. Need some. This one you guys can veto and say move on. That's a Stranger Things 4 teaser that came out.
There's nothing to it. I veto.
I mean,
Hopper's alive.
I you know, I gotta wonder if this is the last one.
I get. I mean, sure.
I feel no. I don't think it'll be the last one. I'm gonna call it now, though. I think this is the last season Millie Bobby Brown's gonna do. I think she's on to bigger things. I think Finn Wolfhard too. Let me hedge my bet. One of the two are gonna leave after this season. And I like the way the last season ended. I like them getting out of Hawkins, but then to pull a fast one and then reveal that the guy everybody loves is actually back in the teaser. I mean, yeah, that's a teaser. Definitely a tease right there. But also, it's kind of like a betrayal of the audience. So kind of like a fuck you. Like, nothing matters.
So it's a fuck you.
That's how I feel about it.
People have long said there are no stakes in Stranger Things.
It's the same thing happens every season. 11 blacks out, does the hero thing, and new season. Move on. Again, season. If it ended after the first season, I think it would go down as one of the better television shows of like probably like the 2010s or something, or at least the better seasons of television in the 2010s. And now I feel like they're milking a little bit. I know people like the last couple seasons or whatever, but not for me.
Now I think Netflix is milking it because it's probably the biggest money. Property they got. So I understand it from that standpoint. I've always felt like Stranger Things is more of a vibe show than it is a story-driven show. People tune in for the setting. They tune in for the time period. They tune in for the homages to 80s horror and 80s science fiction. And also the music, the soundtrack's been very good as well.
Always great soundtrack.
Yeah, always great soundtrack. And it's always been, because it's always been one of those things that nobody ever talks about immediately after the wraps up. They talk about it for a day. But there's no feverish discussion on Stranger Things. I think that is the proportion to other shows that have gotten as big as that one.
Mm-hmm. That's very
people,
true.
You're just kind of into it because it's like a chill hang.
Well, it's a funny alternate when you compare it to something like Mandalorian or the weekly release app. Like, I feel like people would have talked about it more had it been stretched out over a longer time period. Whether that's what everyone wants or not, I don't know. Do people want Quibi? Maybe they want Quibi. Maybe they want 10-minute episodes. But I think we've talked about it. I think the release schedule and how they do it with Stranger Things is a big reason why. People want to see this. We put the trailer out. A lot of people freaked out over it, but I think we saw the last season just kind of came and went really quickly.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, is it almost feels like they keep moving the goalposts with the show. So it's hard to speculate because they're just like, oh, okay. Well, there's another monster, I guess. It's a bigger monster or whatever. But I know a lot of shows do that. I think that's why people talked about Game of Thrones so much, because they knew there was a definitive end. Like they knew there was a finite amount of mileage you could get out of certain things. And, you know, it didn't end the way people wanted, but like something like this is there's no definitive end. There's just like, however long they can keep making money off of it, they're going to make it. And I think that's cool. I think they got to do that. But at the same time, I definitely see this as, I don't see the show sustaining the same level of popularity. I see the Funko Pop still sitting on the shelves at Target every time I go to a new Target to look for my Blacklist Red Reddington Funko Pop, which
never arrives.
They made that in 2015, and they're like $80 on eBay.
I know. Trust me. Fuck. The Dembe limited edition one, I still can't find.
Every time I go to a place that I'm sorry, Jeff, but every time I go to a place that sells Funko Pops, I always look for it because I'm like, Funko Pops are definitely those things that nobody ever rotates, right? They just get a shipment and they fucking keep it on the shelf forever.
For like years and years and years.
There's still Snoke Funko Pops at places, for Christ's sake.
Do you know how much the Betty Boop Funko Pop sells for, the Christmas one at Target?
Oh, no.
How much?
I mean, can you give me a guess?
Like on like the secondary market?
No, this is just how, I don't know how, sure.
I think. Is it like $120?
It's $46. Do you know how much the 2007, this is my last, we did Betty Boop trivia on radio the other day because I was inspired by our discussions. How much on average do the 2007 Olivia Kim's Betty Boop inspired Nike Air Force Ones retail for in 2020?
Probably $275.
$1,765.
God damn.
A lot of money.
Boop, boop, beep, doop. And lastly, did you know that in 1934, a production code forced Betty Boop to change from a carefree flapper into a housewife spinster?
What? Like, is that just due to like propaganda?
Or they
just
I don't know.
You got to support the war effort and you settle down now.
We just roasted her on radio. PFT called her gross. Said Betty was just gross.
Said she's trash. She said it's something for sailors to pound off to in port in the 30s.
Well, did you ever see that animated show Drawn Together?
Yes.
There was a pretty funny show. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the humor hasn't aged well at all, but there was a Betty Boop type character in that one who was just completely disgusting. Did disgusting things. It's kind of funny.
Yep. This episode brought to you in part by the Barstool Store. Time to get your spring stuff, your spring break, your St. Patrick's Day, early summer stuff, your Zillion beer merch. Shout out to our good friend, Dana B, a.k.a. Dustin Bongo, on Lights, Camera, Barstool every now and then. Maybe get some Zillion beer stuff. And also, we might have some cool LCB stuff dropping soon. Keep an eye out for that. I know people ask. If we do, you got to buy it, though. That's the key. You gotta help us out. Also, I think we still have our Parasite Movie Champion shirt up there. So go to store.barstoolsports.com. Zillion beers taking over the planet. More than just merch, it's lifestyle. Hats, koozies, crew necks, all that and more. Crop tops for the ladies. Store.barstoolsports.com. Two big Disney casting pieces of news. Rick Moranis, out of retirement. For Shrunk,
Return of the King,
the next movie in the Honey, I Shrunk the Blank series. This is going to be a movie. This is not going to be a Disney Plus movie. This is a theater movie. It's going to be called Shrunk, the fourth in the franchise. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, and Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. And Shrunk, I don't know when they're saying Shrunk is going to be released, but I do know that Josh Gad is starring in it as Nick Zielinski. Nick was a character in both Shrunk the Kids and Blew Up the Kid, mentioned in Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. And Rick Moranis is back. He is out of retirement. Rick Moranis has not been in a live-action movie since what year, Trill?
It wasn't. What was the one? There's like one after Little Giants. He was in it with somebody. It wasn't that good.
In 1996 with Tom Arnold.
Yes.
Big Bully. That was not it.
Oh, it wasn't it?
The last live-action movie he was in was Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves in 1997. And that wasn't even a theater movie. That was direct-to-video.
Damn, dude. Rick Moranis, his wife passed away, at the start of the 90s, and he took a step back from acting to, you know, focus. He had two young children at that point. To focus on his children. So major respect, but also this 80s kid is super excited to get Rick Moranis back in this property I loved so dearly growing up. I'm very stoked.
That's my question. We'll do this for each of these two news topics. Does Rick Moranis, because I feel like these two, the other one's going to be Mighty Ducks. I feel like we were all kind of on the same page here, like not that excited, whatever. This has completely changed my mind on this. I cannot wait to see Rick Moranis back in a movie. Not that I'm like the biggest Rick Moranis fan of all time, but this now makes me want to see this movie.
Yeah. So, Rick Moranis is great. Rick Moranis is very funny. SCTV, Canadian comic legend, Rick Moranis. I love it. I'm super excited.
He's an absolute, I would say. I was going to say American treasure, but he is, in fact, Canadian. But I think he's one of those guys that everyone likes. There's not many bad things to say about him, like from the stuff you were talking about, Troll, like when you step back to like take care of his kids and be a dad. And like he was at the height of his fame. Like he's like really known by everybody at that point. And he took a step back to be a dad. I don't know a lot of celebrities that would like actually, they would make that choice. And I think that's really cool of him. And I think it makes him an awesome dad and an even better person. And to see him be able to get back into this franchise that helped make him famous, I think is really cool. And it does make me way more excited for it.
Cool for a guy that we shit on all the time, by the way, and Josh Gad, who's a big part of the production of the movie and in it. I know we give Josh Gad a lot of shit, as if we wouldn't be best friends with him if we fucking met him. But that's got to be awesome. Like he's
on the pod one time. He gets Jesse Eisenberg treatment.
Yes.
Yeah. He just becomes our guy. Someone tells him that we just have roasted Olaf. He just hates us. But that's got to be cool. I know he posted somewhere like this is the greatest thing ever that he signed up to do this movie and did it not knowing if Wayne Szalinski, Rick Moranis be back, and sure enough he is. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean that will be a huge deal for this. Obviously, I think that takes this movie from being like a reboot. Or I don't know what you call it, a sequel without like any of the major players, to actually being an event. Rick Moranis returning is a low scale cinematic event.
Agreed.
What about Emilio Estevez back as Gordon Bombay?
This one I don't care.
Same here.
This one I don't care. And no disrespect to Emilio Estevez, because I quite enjoy Emilio Estevez, especially in his Loaded Weapon movies and you know all the shit he did.
Keep mentioning Loaded Weapon. This is, you know, the third reference to randomly Loaded Weapon.
I love the Loaded Weapon, Naked Gun. I love those parody movies. Yeah, me too. But I think this is less on. I mean, the thing here is, this is less on Emilio Estevez and just, I'm just tired of the Mighty Ducks. I don't like the Mighty Ducks that much. I didn't really even like it when I was a kid. I think hockey's fine. But I'm not excited for this. And that, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, I am, I think you should be, because I think a lot of people love the Mighty Ducks and you have every right to love it. Just wasn't something I got attached to. So they could put freaking Tom Skerritt in this movie. I wouldn't even get excited.
So I think that, like, for me anyway, like hockey wasn't a big part of my life growing up, but I still like the Mighty Ducks movies a pretty fair amount. And so I think it's cool to get him back. And I think the show is going to revolve around Lauren Graham, the mom from Gilmore Girls. And it's going to be like her and her son. And her son is played by the kid from Good Boys. But I think he's going to play the kid, and I think the kid is cut from the team, and the mom starts her own team or something to compete against that team, which kind of reminds me of Kicking and Screaming, among a billion other movies. But I think it's cool. I think that's interesting to get him back in the game. I haven't seen Emilio in a while, and that, it just reminds me of this funny American Dad bit where they're just like, how great was Emilio when he was in all these great movies, and then like once he realized everyone was sick of him, just faded out of existence forever. Just gone forever.
What happened was, so all the parents joined the Mighty Ducks team, and then they Googled Gordon Bombay, and they're like, I can't join that team.
Whoops. Whoops.
I see Emilio, and it just reminds me that his brother, Joe Estevez, works on cinema at the cinema with Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington, a very low budget but hilarious, like, I think we're on like 11, 12 seasons now on Adult Swim, which reminds me of Joe Estevez.
What a family, though. You got Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, and then you got other Estevez siblings that are doing things too. I mean, this is prolific. This is a prolific family.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
You know, Jeff loves Martin Sheen too, because he's a big West Wing,
yeah, brain,
yeah.
President Fartlet.
He's got big West Wing brain.
Not my favorite character though. It's Leo. Shout out Leo McGarry.
You probably like Bradley Whitmore's character.
Whitford. Put some respect on his name.
Oh, Bradley Whitford. Sorry.
Josh Lyman. Yeah, I like Josh. Josh's a good character. Really good character. Probably up there. Maybe him and Leo. So you were right. Congratulations.
Let's talk about it more.
Fuck you. The Green Knight. A24. Yeah. Another movie that's going to be really good that no one's going to see.
Yeah.
Stars Dev Patel, Alicia Vikander, Joel Edgerton, Barry Keoghan. That's what I'm going to say we pronounce his name. A fantasy adventure based on the Arthurian legend. The Green Knight tells the story of, how do you say that, Sir Gawain?
Gawain?
I don't know.
I'm going to look it up. The Green Knight.
Sir Gawain.
King Arthur's reckless and headstrong nephew, who embarks on a quest to confront the Green Knight, a gigantic green-skinned stranger. Yeah, looks good. Again, it's A24 did not have a perfect year last year. Let me note that. I'm not going to say A24 only dropped quote-unquote heaters last year, because they definitely did not. They had some movies last year that weren't all that great, at least in my opinion. So I'm not going to say this is a guarantee to be fantastic.
I think they were focusing more on TV last year, because what they put on TV.
They released a lot of movies last year.
Well, they did Euphoria and they did Rami too.
Mm-hmm. Both were great. Rami won a Golden Globe. No,
they released around 20 movies last year, and I would say half of them were not good. They did release some very good ones though.
Right.
So I'm not going to give A24 the immediate stamp of this is going to be great. Because I don't know. A little more hesitant.
I'm not going to join in on any A24 slander whatsoever.
It looks badass. We love them.
I love them so much. And I agree. It does look badass, Tro. Visually, it looks really fucking cool. And outside of the big cast members that you mentioned before, I noticed Sean Harris from Mission Impossible Fallout. And also Kate Dickey, who breastfeeds like a 10-year-old kid in Game of Thrones. Mm. And I can't realize her as anyone else now.
Yeah, no slander intended. I'm just saying, I'm not going to give an auto. This is going to be good. I can't do it. I did not realize how many A24 movies there were until I went through my rankings. And I kind of realized, like, oh, there's a couple of these I didn't like this year. But they still made a lot of good ones. I love Midsommar, Last Black Man in San Francisco, obviously Uncut Gems, The Lighthouse. So this could be great. We'll see. I mean,
mark against it, right, is I don't think Arthurian legends have that strong of a batting average at the movies.
Monty Python? Actually, that grossed very little money.
Yeah, but you're talking gross? You're talking
just quality. I think Monty Python, I mean, obviously that, you know, very good.
Do you remember the Clive Owen King Arthur movie? That was bad.
Yeah, like anytime they try to make an action movie, and I don't – this didn't look like an action movie. This is just a, you know, like a fantasy drama almost.
Transformers The Last Knight.
Yes. Transformers The Last Knight.
I mean, that is a King Arthur movie.
Arthur, the Legend of the Sword or whatever.
Oh.
That one was
– you know what was a good one was the Kid Who Would Be King.
Yeah, Kid Who Would Be King.
That's enjoyable.
Good. I enjoyed that, yeah.
Oh, so, you know, maybe there are things there. But I thought this looked – the visuals looked awesome. I loved what they did there. Part of me watching it, I was kind of like – you know, I like The Witcher, but I was like, I wish The Witcher kind of looked like this, looked like this quality.
Right.
It was really neat. So, I'm excited for it. I'm curious what the budget is.
Green Knight?
It looked expensive compared to like A24.
A24, I believe, is smaller budget. They don't make a ton of money, but they make back their money.
But compared to like some of the other ones where they, you know, they have a GoPro and they're in a haunted house and they're like, make a movie. It's like $5 million somehow and it makes $30 million. This one at least has like good looking special effects with the flames and then the, I guess, who I'm assuming to be the Green Knight, who looked like a tree.
They're eventually also going to get completely bought by Apple. I think we've been predicting that.
Yeah. For,
I mean, they're already working with them on Apple TV Plus. So
I think that would be that'd be a very, I don't know, like that makes a logical fit because that fits in with the Apple brand. That's like a high concept, very artistic.
Weighted digital on the visual. Lord of the Rings guys. Hmm. Always love that.
Interesting.
What I was trying to say is like Blumhouse is the GoPro. Like A24 is, they actually have a real camera, but you know,
But A24 would release a really good movie on a GoPro. Like they would legitimately film it. I mean, they have two iPhone movies, I believe.
Not Felicity Jones. The one where she's in like the mental institution. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I can't think of the title.
I can't remember the name of it, but that one. I don't think that was A24, though. Or was it?
Oh, the one that was on an iPhone. The Soderbergh movie.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. What was the name of it? Oh, man. I think Tangerine was an iPhone. I thought that was A24. I might be dead wrong on that. Unsane.
That's right. I liked Unsane. That was a good movie.
Unsane was with Claire Foy.
Claire Foy. That's right.
Unsane was done by Bleecker Street. No, Regency Enterprise. Okay. Yeah, whatever. It seems like A24. Whatever.
When anything's good, I just assume it's A24.
We got two more things, and then we got one more thing, then quick hitters, right? I just want quick opinions. But we're talking video game movies a lot this week. This is a video game movie piece of news. Our box office game today, since nobody in the Velocipaster is going to work for the box office game, we're going to do box office video game. Box office game for video game movies.
Mm.
Let's get the brain going. This is the least shocking news I've heard in quite a while. Call of Duty movie currently on hold at Activision, says writer. And not only on hold, kind of sounds like it may just never happen.
They put it on hold because they're trying to patch the movie and it was 145 terabytes.
you get halfway through, there's a loot box to continue.
What did I say earlier? Oh, we were talking about video games in our group. I talked about Call of Duty. I will stick by the wording of the size of updates for the new Call of Duty game. They're offensive. They're
it's a whole
shocking.
New game. It's a whole new game. Are you downloading the whole game every time you update?
You have to delete other games to download the game.
It's a whole new game in that you get two more maps for the cost of the like 2, 3, 4 hours of download time.
With the cost of you just can't play FIFA now because you have to get FIFA off your system.
Oh, yeah. I had to delete the update. I had to delete God of War to download this.
That's actually what they're trying to do. They're just like, well, you know, people can't play other games if we take up their entire one terabyte hard drive.
I think it's a big we don't give a fuck about. Like, the Call of Duty movie I thought was always going to be a war movie anyway, just a war movie with the IP name Call of Duty. This doesn't do anything for me at all.
No, I think they probably thought about it from every angle, and they're like, there's no way to make this good.
There's no way to make this not Hunter Killer or something in that realm, which doesn't mean it would be a bad thing, but you can't make it anything better than, like, I don't know, B-plus level action, right? Like, you can't make this into, like, fucking like John Wick, where it's, like, a highly respected action franchise. I don't know how you do that with Call of Duty.
I don't know either, and I want to say, like you got to appeal to the sensibilities of the Call of Duty fan base, which is a very wide, wide fan base. But, you know, you also, like, when you get Call of Duty players, I don't know what percentage of the players are under the age of, like, 16, but I feel like there's a lot of 13- and 14-year-olds on there. So automatically, you have this IP that basically, it's a war movie, so you want to put an R rating on it, but then a lot of people who are really into Call of Duty can't get in the movie by themselves. So I think, you know, you're at an impasse as to what type of movie do you want to make? And then, do you like have to loop Call of Duty lore into it? Or are you going to make a war movie with the Call of Duty name on it? Then what's the fucking point? I don't think they can figure out how to make this good. Because I can't. And if I can't do it, then they can. Because I'm a fucking genius.
Make it a fucking Roland Emmerich movie. That's the guy you need to attach to this.
Yes. Yes. That's all I'll say. Yes.
They need to go all out and just have Eminem do the entire soundtrack and just have him, like, you know, what Kendrick Lamar did with Black Panther, have Eminem do the Call of Duty soundtrack. and if this ever got released, I just imagine the blitz of media advertising, et cetera, that would like follow up on this. Like, you thought the Star Wars dulled bananas were something else. Like, you're just now going in. You got Call of Duty on the Dr. Pepper bottles now. It's like, enter the code to see if you want a Jeep Modern Warfare edition. Like, I think it's there for them to make money. I just don't know if they figured out how to make something that isn't laughed at. Because the problem is, if you make something shitty, then the people at Activision are like, you fucking with my brand, dude.
So, hear me out here. Roland Loud. But it's just Roland Emmerich movies for 24 hours straight in Miami or something.
I don't hate that.
We'll workshop that someday with Roland if we ever get him on the pod.
Yeah. Hey, we have we only need you for 5 minutes. We have an idea.
Look, Roland Loud.
A Roland Emmerich movie festival taking place in Chicago's Millennium Park on the same weekend as Lollapalooza.
I like
it. You're saying it's at Lollapalooza? No. No.
No.
We rented a separate space on the side.
All right, quick hitters. These are quick pieces of news. I need a quick opinion, and you are not allowed to say I don't care. You have to give an opinion, okay?
I don't care.
Nope.
Oh.
You have to.
Okay.
Frankenstein back. Rami Malek approached to direct. I already fucked that up. Sam Raimi or John Krasinski potentially approached to direct.
Okay. Sam Raimi, I'll be fine. John Krasinski, the more intriguing pick right here. Let's see him work with this. He worked with his own source material last time, and I thought he did a good job at it. I'd like to see old Jim take a crack at the Bride of Frankenstein.
I don't like either of them for this, personally.
Well, so, I don't like the Bride of Frankenstein.
Neither do I.
I'm trying to.
What's funnier?
Funny is the Bride of Frankenstein a comedy movie, or are you just saying like a name you wouldn't expect? Like we?
No, not even necessarily. I want this to be funny.
Like we got Liev Schreiber to direct it.
I want, yeah, exactly.
He's playing He's playing Ray Donovan.
What's that? What?
Yes, Liev Schreiber's directing Bride of Frankenstein. Let's start the rumor. Someone tweet it out and make screen rant and make a whole.
I could do a rumor. I could tweet that out. Rumor: Liev Schreiber approached to direct
make a graphic
comedic version of Bride of Frankenstein. I'll tweet it out. I'm currently tweeting out a quote.
Where he plays Ray Donovan.
Yes, he plays Ray Donovan in the movie.
Okay, I can do that. I'll do it after we're done recording. I'm currently tweeting out a quote from Harrison Ford in USA Today where he was asked about if Han's a force ghost, and he says, I have no fucking idea what a force ghost is, and I
King. Classic. I love him so much.
I'm just imagining him like being on the set of Call of the Wild.
Wait, did you see the video of Call of the Wild today?
Yeah. Yes.
From CBS this morning? The dog was not real?
Fucking
the dog
crazy,
was CGI,
right?
It was a human. I'm that's dead serious.
Ballistic.
The dog was he acted with a person on hands and knees playing a dog.
It was Harrison Ford's earring guy. his earring ballet travels with him with a case. He snaps his fingers and he opens up the case and he picks which stud he wants.
I saw that one. I saw the interview. I don't know. I forget which guy I was with, but they showed him a quote from Mark Hamill that they tweeted at him, which is pretty cool. Whispers is nice. And I like when they interact, Hamill and Harrison Ford.
You know, like when Harrison Ford passes away in 40 years or hopefully 40 years, they're going to be at his funeral and somebody's going to be like, I loved him in Star Wars. And then he's going to groan while he's dead. He's gonna be like, oh, I just can't get away from this.
Didn't you see Patriot Games?
I was in right. Other things.
Next one, Kendrick, you go first. Aladdin 2 officially happening, but it will be an original story, not based on the return of Jafar.
Bringing back Guy Ritchie, I say I'm back in. He was able to make it maybe one of the only of the recent live action remakes that was very tolerable, and I liked it.
That's how the meeting went like this. You guys want to do Return of Jafar? And they're like, bring back the worst part of Aladdin? No thanks. We're doing a new story. I'm excited for this.
Recast, please recast Jafar if they bring him back, though. And I like that actor, but not in that role. We call that a miscast. Not great. Next one is Jurassic. It's a different one. I don't want your opinion on this. I want you to guess their character names. Jurassic World 3 to bring back Jake Johnson and Omar Sy for the movie.
John Jakeson.
Dom Stevens, and Crane Lancaster.
Omar Sy's name was Barry.
Okay.
And Jake Johnson was Lowry Cruthers.
No way. No way they said that name at any point during that movie. There was no fucking way.
No one ever said, oh, Lowry Cruthers.
No one said Lowry. No one said any either of those people's names during the movie.
It sounds like they're like looking through their pantry and just saw some like Lowry seasoning salt and then had some Worcestershire sauce that was like Cruthers. And they're like, okay.
Worcestershire. Shout out to Worcestershire.
Guillermo del Toro adds new cast members to his next movie, or one of his next movies. Tilda Swinton, Ewan McGregor, Christoph Waltz, and Ron Perlman. Sounds good, right?
That's a great cast, baby. Love that for Pinocchio. Even though, again, Pinocchio, creepy Italian puppet, Geppetto. We don't know what his story is, but he's creepy. He keeps me out a lot.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm just not a Pinocchio guy. You know what Ron Perlman was in that I watched this weekend?
What?
Alien Resurrection. I've been through all the Alien movies.
Yeah, you did. I meant to say something because you started commenting on all the Alien movies in succession.
Yes.
And I was like, I think he's just binging the Alien movies, folks.
Which Alien, one does they get sucked through the spaceship? Because I like that part. That was gross.
That was Aliens, I think.
No, it gets sucked through the hole. You know?
Yeah, an alien. Not through like, oh. Yeah, I don't know. They all blend together.
It's the big white alien. That's like the hybrid of Ripley and I think the alien.
It's the moment referenced in Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
That's what
I think that was Resurrection. Mm-hmm. I'm not fully done with Resurrection. I started watching it, but I went through Alien, Aliens, Alien 3. And I got to say, I think Aliens is my favorite. I think James Cameron, I think old Jimmy did a really good job with that one, followed by Alien, which I probably the better movie, but I just like the vibe of Aliens better. Like the game over, man, game over guy. Alien Resurrection, though, like from what I've seen of it on the rewatch, makes Alien 3 feel like Aliens, though. Because I was watching Alien 3, I'm like, this isn't good. Then I started watching Resurrection. I'm like, okay, I'll take Alien 3 every day.
Mm-hmm.
Any day.
Go watch Prometheus, your favorite movie.
Ugh.
Why do you hate it so much?
Prometheus? Because I thought it was boring. I thought it was plotting. I thought it didn't have a direction. I thought there was so much wasted potential there.
I think it was fun. I had a good time with it.
Fun? Prometheus is fun.
Okay, maybe not fun. Definitely the wrong word, but I enjoyed Prometheus. I'm
so offended by that.
Remember when he rips the guy's head off? It was sick as hell.
I just was so disappointed by Prometheus because the alien lore has the opportunity to be so fantastic and so interesting, because like that's one of the big questions all through the original Alien movies of who are these creatures? And actually, I think it's probably one that's better left unanswered, but I still wanted to know. And
you got the engineers. What more do you want? You got the engineers. Your questions were answered, Tro. I was more disappointed by Covenant because I thought that Prometheus set the table for something to be better than Prometheus, and then Covenant was very bad.
Yeah. Aliens is so good, though. Paul Reiser. That's Paul Reiser. Paul Reiser looks 27.
That was, in fact, young Paul Reiser.
It's young Paul Reiser. And you know who's in Alien 3?
Who?
Charles Dance. Charles Dance was like 47. Really? Charles Dance was like 47 during this movie, but like compared to how he looks now, he looks like he's in his 30s. It's nuts.
The Velocipastor.
Confife.
2017 American comedy horror movie. It's streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Or just Amazon. I hate saying Prime Video, just Amazon. Summary of this movie is Pastor Doug Jones becomes infected by a curse in China, resulting in him turn. This is after his parents died, by the way. Resulting in him turning into a velociraptor when he becomes angry. He decides to kill criminals, including drug-dealing ninjas, by using his transformation. The pastor travels the world for his self-given mission.
Is he a pastor or a priest?
He really is a priest, because I don't think he's a pastor.
A priest is a different thing from a pastor.
I'll read
right?
a couple notes from Brendan Steer, the guy who directed the movie. He did a Reddit AMA and he said a couple things that are pretty good. But I'll read this production note from Wikipedia. The director thought of the idea in 2010 while he was attending School of the Visual Arts in Manhattan after his phone auto-corrected Velociraptor to Velocipastor.
Mm. Sounds like the phone project. Sounds like the phone thought of the idea.
Yep. Steer made a short film of fake grindhouse trailers, which included the Velocipastor. His prior YouTube videos had around 45 views each, but his class project received around 45,000, resulting in him thinking it might be a good idea.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's how he got there. He said the movie's made to be fun, and anybody looking for deeper meaning in the man turns into a dinosaur genre is probably on a fool's errand. There were two attempts to crowdfund the film for like 5 years, between 2011-2016, using Kickstarter and Speed and Spark. Never heard of that. The film received funding from a private investor that the mother of Steer's friend knew. The Velocipastor was filmed for $35,000. It has a 70% of Rotten Tomatoes from critics. It is definitely meant to not be good.
Obviously.
That's the joke. It's a parody. It's very funny, at least in my opinion. Very dumb. It's obviously not good. The effects are done in a way to look bad. They all come off hilarious. One of the effects in the movie is just not even done. His parents dying. It says VF. The screen literally says VFX. What, car burning?
Car explosion, and then car VFX explosion. Car on fire.
Yeah. There's a lot of little funny gags in here. We'll talk about our favorites. It's hard to rate a movie like this for me, and so I'm gonna cop out and do what I did with. I can't give something like this a rating. I don't know. Maybe I will by the end. Maybe I'll think about it.
That's what I was gonna say.
I put this in the same boat as Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie. It's not a movie in the same intention of something like Sonic or Fantasy Island, and it's there to have fun. It's a very, very by the book B movie, made to be dumb, made to be laughed at and have fun with. And there are some really fucking funny moments in this thing.
Can I tell you my favorite gag?
Yes. Yeah.
Cause I think we'll get into conversation. So the best part of this movie was the older priest.
Yes. Yes. Opinion. I was about to say the flashback sequence.
The Vietnam flashback. And actually Brandon, the director, says his favorite part of the movie is the Vietnam flashback.
That's the funniest part of the movie. So I enjoyed it overall. I can't give it a rating either because it's not, I don't think it's meant to be rated. I don't think you're supposed to watch this as you would a movie and judge it on any merit other than did you enjoy it or not. And I enjoyed it. But I will say when they did the flashback and they did, you know, made no effort to de-age him whatsoever, except maybe his hair. And then
they put the giant wig on him and then put the helmet over the wig.
Yeah. And, then like his wife is there and she's running up and like running towards him and then steps on the landmine a foot in front of him and just bad CGI blows up on him. That was my favorite gag.
And then the guy walks up and he's like, I don't think there's anything we can do for her. She's too far gone. I will give this movie a rating. I'll give it a 69 and then I'll say tentative. We're going to change it or not. The whole Vietnam flashback, like when he walks out with the other priest who isn't de-aged because he's already young, and they made him look older in the future, and he's just wearing the lighter colored hair and mustache wig. Like I burst out laughing. It was so fucking funny. And I think a lot of this, it's like you said, it's like it's not really meant to be like kind of digested like a real movie, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like everything about it was so fucking stupid and funny, and it's not like enjoyable, but it's like I feel like we force ourselves to watch it and ended up enjoying it. So I don't know.
I mean, just the effect of when he turns into a raptor.
It's so good.
Alone is one of the funniest things. It looks so stupid. <It's> so
the scene where he's fighting the ninjas and he's in the full raptor suit for the first time is, and they're all just like trying to kick him and he's just falling over and can't get up. It is so fucking good.
It's and there are a lot of like things in here, like, you know, and they do tackle some tropes, like the hooker with the heart of gold trope is kind of addressed pretty comedically in here. What are some other ones? Let's just talk about the gags.
The Frankie Mermaid, the pimp.
Yes.
I like that guy. the most overdone character I've ever seen.
he's the mermaid.
When he's in the confession, he's like, oh yeah, when's the last time I murdered somebody? I was like, last week. Yeah. I was here at this church, actually. Some kid's parents.
And then when he kills him, he just sits there screaming. There is so much screaming in this movie. It fucking rocks.
The setting for the movie is always like a forest, and all of a sudden it just says China at one point.
It's weird. The forest of China look like upstate New York.
They just throw big block letters China across the screen. Now they've just changed settings.
Man, I'm trying to think of some other parts I really liked from it. The scene where they first have sex, I thought was kind of funny. And like how they kept like trying to play up him trying to eventually leave the clergy and all that shit was really good. The exorcism scene also very funny. With like that weird Dan Bilzerian guy, mystical Dan Bilzerian.
Yeah, it was. I just love that older priest. He had some comment about like when he went to China that was just so stupid. But then, like, I think there's this conversation they're having, and the velocipastor was like, "You don't understand, I'm different." And he's like, "There's others like you."
Yep.
It's like, no, I mean, not that. Whatever.
Yeah, dude, that was so good. And the ninja brother guy is, "You're my brother? How?" And then, like, they could do the flashback again, and it's the dad saying to velocipastor, "You're my only son," while he's standing right there in the doorway. It's just so. It's so ridiculous.
Some of the lines too, like the night after they have sex and they're in, it's the morning of and they're in bed and then the ninjas barge into the room and they defeat the ninjas. And just the line, where did all these ninjas come from?
Yep.
That's perfect.
You know, it reminded me of, did you guys ever see Kung Fury?
Yes. Yes.
I think we've talked about it once or twice. Yeah.
It reminded me of Kung Fury.
Was it Kung Fury or Kung Pao? Kung Pao.
It's not Kung Pao. Kung Fury was the one that was like the cyberpunk.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Type movie that I think started as like a skit and then got crowdfunded. And I mean, the budget for that one was $630,000. So compared to this, I mean, it's magnitudes more expensive than Kung Fury. And I mean, it shows in the production, but just in terms of like the over the top, intentionally trying to be a B movie, it reminded me of that, in the general tone.
Well, what was that one movie? Was it Samurai Cop that they always make fun of? Except I think Samurai Cop was serious, but it reminded me a little bit of like the clips I've seen from that.
I'm not sure. I've never heard of Samurai Cop.
Fuck. I remember just watching a bunch of clips of it once. It was very funny. But I think I ended up enjoying this quite more than I thought I would. But like, I think it just takes a minute to get into, right? Because like the first 20 minutes, I'm like, what the fuck is happening here, right? Because like, you don't know if it's gonna be tongue-in-cheek, you don't know where it's already going, but I think you kind of, once it sets the vibe, it's, there's a lot of really funny moments.
Yeah, and there's an over there, it becomes a little too much at times. I will say that, where you're like, all right, I guess it's funny, but like, I guess like we kind of get it right at this point, but it's but I think overall it works and it's fine. It just, it may get to a point where you're like, all right, I've had enough of this. Like, when you really break it down individually, it's very funny. As a whole, I don't know if everyone will love it. But if you saw little bits and pieces of this, I think, for the most part, you would fucking laugh. I mean, even just like, the way blood spews in this is unbelievable. There's always so much blood. And it's like, not good fake blood either. It just looks off, and that makes it all the more hilarious.
Right. And the good part about it is it doesn't overstay its premise too long because it's not that long of a movie.
Yeah.
It's a very, very short movie.
It's like an hour long?
It feels like an hour.
It's an hour and 10, I believe.
Yeah. A little over an hour. So it's almost like watching a television show, like a pilot episode. It felt like a pilot episode for The Velocipastor.
Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't really know so much else to say.
Although I think I said that you're not supposed to enjoy it, but I enjoyed it.
No, you're definitely supposed to enjoy it.
I think you're supposed to enjoy it.
That's the whole point of the movie. I mean, he even said that. He's like you're supposed to have fun with this. Like, if you start overthinking this, you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, he doesn't try to be anything different. It's also not like, I would say I don't think it's brilliant. I don't think it's a parody that I would put in the pantheon of send-ups of, genre parodies. But I think it's funny enough to... I think it's funny enough in that sense. It's like, this, I respect that it came from someone's brain and they actually put it on a medium of media and shared it with other people. And I respect that.
That's well said. I really don't think there's much else to say about it.
Will you talk more about Ellen's Game of Games or Zoe's extraordinary playlist?
I don't know. Why are you in the mood to talk about middle of the road network TV?
You know, when you tune into NBC on a Sunday night, you never know what you're going to get. Unless it's between September and December, then you know what you're going to get. It's football. But right now, what's on right now? It's a show. I think it's still Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. I think it's the second episode.
Bob Abishola.
No, man, that's CBS.
What a whiff not making that Bob Abishola. The heart ruins the whole thing. It should be Bob Abishola.
There's a Del DeFunky Homo Sapiens song called Bob Dabalina, Mr. Dabalina.
Do you want to do a box office game?
Hell yeah, I do. Last time we got taken down, didn't we?
Yeah, you guys did lose the first time in a long time. So here we go. Box office game for video game movies. So you may want to Google video game movies. So you have them up. You see what available movies there are for you to pick from here.
Detective Pikachu, first pick.
The list is going to be rough.
All right, so let's go in order here. I guess if you have a first one you agree on, go for it. We're looking for top five highest grossing at the worldwide box office.
Detective Pikachu, Troll.
Yeah, Detective Pikachu.
All right, you're one for one. Detective Pikachu is number two.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it's one or two.
I think Rampage is up there too.
Yeah, Rampage.
Okay, you got two. You got two and three. Rampage and Detective Pikachu.
The World of Warcraft movie I know didn't do well here, but I think made like a shit ton of money overseas. But I don't know if that's going to be equal them being top five.
Duncan Jones. I do Warcraft.
Yeah.
Warcraft is number one.
Oh.
Yeah. So you got the top three. Now I think it's going to get hard.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of movies.
So many Resident Evil movies.
There is a lot of them. I don't think any of them could be here. From
Prince of Persia.
Assassin's Creed.
It's definitely got to be like more modern.
Definitely more recent.
Super Mario, no. Street Fighter, no. Mortal Kombat, no. Annihilation, no. Wing Commander, no. Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. Maybe the 2001 version, the first Resident Evil.
Need for Speed, that stunk.
Let's do Prince of Persia.
Yeah, sure.
Prince of Persia. The Sands of Time.
Uh-huh.
That's number four.
Ooh, we need one more left?
So you do have one more left, and you have three guesses. Three guesses to avoid your first losing streak.
Need for Speed, Tomb Raider 2018. Oh, this is so tough.
The Doom movie, I forgot about that.
I'll mention some others you haven't said. Silent Hill, Max Payne, Hitman, Agent 47.
Are those not on the list here?
Timothy Elephant. Was that the Timothy Elephant one?
Yeah. Sonic the Hedgehog, Timothy Elephant.
So there's a Timothy Elephant one. There's another one with Rupert Friend, I believe, right? Homeland guy.
God, dude, if it's one of these Resident Evil movies,
I have like no idea how much they made, like any of them. I'm pretty sure the first one was domestically successful, but...
Yeah, they can't make that much, right?
Yeah.
What about the 2018 Tomb Raider? Let's try that.
You are incorrect. 2018 Tomb Raider comes in at number seven.
Oh, what about, damn.
What about number eight? Number eight. So you are wrong. You have two guesses left.
What about the Lara Croft movies? True.
Yeah, let's try the first Tomb Raider, Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Or do you want to try the second one?
I think the first one.
Let's try the first one.
Incorrect. Number seven. Fun fact.
Tomb Raiders are seven and eight?
Lara Croft Tomb Raider made almost exactly $50,000 more than the Alicia Vikander.
Oh, wow.
Almost made the exact same total.
Oh.
Mm, all right, dude, this is it.
Do one of the Resident Evils.
It's got to be one of the Resident Evils, but I don't know which one. They're all like Afterlife, Retribution.
What are the names?
Okay, so... Resident Evil, Resident Evil Apocalypse, Resident Evil Extinction, Resident Evil Afterlife, Resident Evil Retribution, and then Silent Hill Revelation. This is fucking titling so bad for these things. Dude, I didn't know. Oh, and then Resident Evil The Final Chapter.
I went to the final chapter, if I remember correctly. I don't know why. I don't know. You should take a random shot. I don't know. It's got to be one of those.
But we didn't try Assassin's Creed.
There's no fucking way it's Assassin's Creed. They got panned so bad, I'm pretty sure no one saw it.
Oh, boy. What about... No, I don't know. Dude, I don't want to be the guy responsible for picking one of these Resident Evil movies and then come to find out they each made like $25 million.
No, but they definitely made like 100 like-ish each. Like they made good money. I just don't know which one will have made the most money.
I can't figure it out. So Resident Evil Afterlife came out in 2010.
I will eliminate one for you because technically, I'll eliminate two. Because they're separated lists here. Pokemon, the first movie's not here. You weren't saying it anyway. Same with the movie 2000. Angry Birds movie, if you include it, would have been number four, but it's lower down on this another list of just animated. So that's okay. Not in there. And I imagined you weren't going to guess Ratchet and Clank either. So
they made a Ratchet and Clank movie?
It did. In 2016, it was very bad.
Oof.
With the tagline, kick some asteroid.
Oh, yeah.
Damn, yeah.
I do remember.
That's frequently what I say. What do you think, Ken Jack?
Go through the names. Go through the Resident Evil names again.
Resident Evil. Resident Evil Apocalypse. Resident Evil Extinction. Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. Resident Evil Afterlife.
I don't know. Just pick whatever the most recent one is. And then hope that's made the most money because it's...
We will pick Resident Evil, the final chapter.
All right, so... Resident Evil was a Resident Evil movie is the last one.
How make so much money? Nobody ever talks about Resident Evil movies.
I don't know.
It's not a thing that comes up at Thanksgiving.
Raccoon City.
Resident Evil, the first one, made $102 million, far down the list. Resident Evil Afterlife made $300 million.
Ooh, ticking up.
Resident Evil Afterlife made $300 million, and that placed it at number six. Okay. Apocalypse then made $129 million. Extinction made $148 million.
Uh-oh.
Retribution made $240 million.
Oh, okay.
And Resident Evil The Final Chapter 2017 made $312 million and comes in at number five on the list. So you got it correct.
Oh, nice.
I don't feel good about it.
Neither do I.
I don't feel like I picked that in a confident manner. I feel like we just took the most recent Resident Evil movie because of inflation, and it just ended up working out for us.
Prince of Persia was a Disney movie. That's crazy. What a miss. Oh,
Prince of Persia. Especially when you look at the first Prince of Persia video game ever made.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just... bare bones computer game where a guy jumps between ledges.
I remember I had one of the games and I bought it without telling my mom. I'm on like my phone, like a flip phone. She got very mad. I think it was like a reoccurring charge somehow. It was not good.
You had a Prince of Persia hourglass on your first iPhone. It just like tipped over.
I don't even remember what you did in the game, but it stunk. I remember that much.
The Prince of Persia. So what do we got next for video game movies after Sonic the Hedgehog? We got Monster Hunter, Mortal Kombat, an Uncharted movie, Tomb Raider 2.
Uncharted, which will never be released.
Literally never. Keep dropping directors and shit. Moving.
Oh, Minecraft 2022.
That's right. That's
the title of the movie, like Blade Runner.
Strike while the iron's hot from Minecraft. Yeah. Just get that out there.
Notch doesn't have enough money.
Minecraft's... kind of had a resurgence though, hasn't it? Like, I mean, it's always kind of been there. It's just not as big as it used to be. Then the untitled Mega Man film, that's going to suck ass. Untitled Metal Gear Solid film, that's going to suck ass. Call of Duty's on here, Pikachu sequel, and Sonic the Hedgehog sequel. Angry Birds movie, I think that probably should have been on the list, but it wasn't.
It was animated.
Animated category. Yeah. Oh, the Final Fantasy Spirits Within. That's right. When I think Final Fantasy, I think the voice of Alec Baldwin and James Woods.
So, I just read something. One of the voice actors from Recess died.
Wow. Who's their voice?
All right,
Jason Davis. He voiced. I'm not joking. Mikey Bloomberg.
Oh, the big kid. Mikey was a big kid, right?
Yeah, but I think it's Mikey Bloomberg. I think is how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Mikey Blumhouse.
We will be reviewing Sonic the Hedgehog and Fantasy Island probably going to have Ken Jack, depending on your internet connection in Costa Rica.
Let's do it. Can't wait.
Yeah. May have a guest on too. Not totally sure about that yet, though. I'm looking forward to talking about both those movies. I think there's a fair amount to talk about with Sonic, and I'm confident you guys will think Fantasy Island is horrendous. And I think there's a lot to talk about there, taking existing properties, trying to make them something different, and using the name to try to – there's a lot going on there.
It was Lucy Hale's in it, right?
Yep. Michael Pena.
She was on Kimmel the other night. Don't ask me why I was watching Kimmel. But she didn't really talk about Fantasy Island that much. She was on there to promote Katie Keene. So I don't think she's too proud of Fantasy Island either.
From the people who did her other movie, Truth or Dare, comes another new movie. Fuck yeah.
Bangers.
Just excellent. Not sure if the people totally believe this Ray Donovan bit.
Oh, I got to go hit the retweet.
Liev Schreiber may have been approached to star as Ray Donovan in the upcoming Bride of Frankenstein movie. Yep. We'll see if they believe it, folks. All right, that's it for Ken, Jack, and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you later on in the week.
Have a good week at the box office.